Good morning. I actually was going to try to stay away from process and talk about content, but I'll bring some of those issues up. Lynn and Elaine set me up rather nicely. There's a bottom line message here, and the Science Board is not anyone's enemy. We are a member, as you are a member. Our job, though, is to indeed assure the science that any resolution coming out of APHA has, so that, one, we're not anybody's laughing stock, but it is serious, and two, we can make an impact on legislation that's coming up nationally. So my presentation is divided into three pieces. The first is, and it kind of is a quick review of your civics subject way back when, how a policy actually moves to Congress. Because ultimately, that's what will happen when we have an APHA policy, because we want to influence that piece. And then secondly, I'll talk particularly about the issues of science related to policy. And then thirdly, we'll talk about a new proposal to make sure that policy information, the policy resources that Lynn and Elaine talked about as you're beginning to develop a policy are at your fingertips rather than waiting all the way to JPC. So here we go. These are the learning objectives, and I didn't have a special slide, but I too don't have any conflicts of interest. So public policy is developed by multiple levels of government. It is influenced by government and the private sector. It's a distribution of authority. There is a distribution of authority among federal government agencies. And I say that because often when we see the resolutions and the recommendations, it's even though it's directed outside, sometimes it's directed to the wrong agency. And so taking Lynn's proposal, we wouldn't want to send that to the Department of Energy. They may be involved in creating new, you know, snacks, but that's not the agency you want to send it to. So it points out to Lynn's issue of make sure you research what it is you're writing. Because from a process and science perspective, we would look a little funny as an agency to say, you know, take out all the cookies and ask the Department of Energy to take out all the cookies in San Francisco. Wouldn't we look a little funny? So those are the things that we don't want to have happen. There is a relationship between policy formation and policy implementation, and I'll come back to that because Lynn is right. Elaine and Lynn are right. Just having developed your policy is not the time to declare victory. And we'll talk about how reform happens. So typically how policy develops, as policy develops within APHA, somebody raises an issue or a group raises an issue, they design the policy, they get public support, and I would say sometimes you should flip those, get public support first for your issue, then design the policy. There is legislative decision making, then this is Congress, and ultimately there's policy implementation if there's money. But this is the basic paradigm. Every single policy follows this route, whether it is within APHA or another organization or Congress. There is some kind of pressure that a group puts on an issue. That pressure, if it is strong enough, if it is has a strong enough evidence base, there is some action. That action typically is a policy that's then implemented. The action then results in a change, and when I teach policy at Tulane, I use somewhat of a ridiculous example, but I use that because I want to get to feasibility, and that is that our colors are green, and I say, you know, what if we, the student body, and all the faculty came up and said, from tomorrow on, there cannot be any other color than green in all the chairs and all the rooms at Tulane. Now, the president might, you know, think it's a good idea, but it really isn't feasible. And so a change has to be something that is feasible. And then you have to monitor that change. If you really want all the chairs to be green, you need to make sure year after year after year that the chairs remain green. Because if not, and I'll show my age currently, there was way back when a kid's game called Pac-Man, and the arrows go the other way, and so Pac-Man goes up and eats your policy, and all of your work was for nothing. So that's the basic design. We know that there are three branches of government. All three are involved in policy development. The Constitution gives the power to create and implement policies, policies to tax, policies to spend, things that we are very concerned about currently, right? So in the legislative process, the first part is the bill is introduced in the House. Way before that happens, APHA wants to influence that bill. So that's why our process has to be very timely. It goes to the Appropriations Committee. There is a subcommittee that may look at the bill. Then heavy lobbying occurs, and all the lobbying firms, as you know, are on K Street. That's where the lobbying happens. But lobbying happens within our sections as well if it refers to an APHA policy. It goes to the full House. Then it goes to the Senate. There is a subcommittee. Usually they vote on it. The full Senate hears the bill, and if it's agreed upon, it goes to the President. Usually it doesn't happen like that. There is a conference. In conference committee, things can change a lot. Then the President has about 21 days to sign the bill. If he doesn't sign it, it becomes law unless there is a two-thirds veto. So this is what happens with bills. And bills, although policies in APHA can take 4 months, bills in Congress can take years, many, many years. So policies are really a definite course of our method of action, selected among alternatives. So I always use the Iraq War as an example of a bad policy, because there were no alternatives considered. I couldn't think of a better example. If your option is one, then you haven't considered alternatives. And it doesn't only set current policy, but future action. And that's often what policy authors forget. So the first thing to do is an environmental scan, and Bodlin and Elaine talked about it. But so if you have an issue, is the issue a new threat? Or is it a Me Too policy? Example, obesity. We have a ton of obesity policies in place currently. So to have another policy on obesity, there has to be something really drastically new science, a new law that came up that we as an organization need to act against. So if it's not a new law, it may be the best policy you wrote, but we will go into that archive, as Elaine talked about, and pull up 14 or 44 policies on obesity. So then it's a Me Too policy, and that will not go. So is it Me Too, or is it a new threat? Does your policy have sticks penalizing you? If you don't do this, you will. But does your policy also have carrots? A lot that gets done, more with carrots than sticks. Do you have advocates? You've heard examples within the organization. And do you know your adversaries? Is your policy feasible? This is the Tulane chair example. And is your policy sustainable? Is this not a one-year thing, like a fashion show? Will it stay forever? Okay. So making the case is important, and using evidence to make your case is critical. So I'll go through what the significance is, what the public health relevance is, talk about approach, how you look at the environment of your policy, and then innovations, because that's the same rigor the science board goes through. So with respect to the science, the first question we ask, but should really something be done? Is there something critical and urgent that needs to be done right now? The way you answer that question, and I invite you to come to this afternoon's session on making science work for communities, is to use data. Use data to show there really is a burden of the green collar disease, and therefore something needs to be done. There are too many people that are vulnerable, suffering from green collar disease. Then if we establish that fact, what really should be done? How should we attack that issue? The most difficult question in public health is the how question. How should it be done? how should we attack that green collar disease? And then the last but often the forgotten question is it working? Is what we want to do works? So I'll talk about some of the effectiveness, but every policy also has a return on investment. And that return on investment can be in dollars, that return on investment can be in decreased morbidity, it could be in fewer people dying, but there has to be a return on investment. So significance, what will the new policy address that is not being addressed now? That's critical. No matter how passionate I am about green chairs, if there is a policy already on green chairs, I'm a me too. No, not needed. So what if the new policy is implemented? What will change because of that new policy? How will it be implemented? That's the approach. And are the proposed actions, that's the make it or break it question, are they feasible and sustainable? So the innovation part is, so what's new? What is new about your policy? When to propose a new policy? Is the current policy not solving? Is current, all the 44 policies on obesity, are they not solving the issue that's currently at hand? If they are, then it's a Me Too policy. Is there new credible scientific evidence that has not been taken into account? So let me use this opportunity to talk about what happens with a policy. When you submit it in January and you've done all the homework that Lynn and Elaine talked about, in April the science board gets together. We spent 3 days reviewing every single policy. The policies, once they come in January, are assigned to each one of us, and they're assigned to us based on our area of expertise. So typically, the science board would not assign a policy on, let me think of something, on oral health to me, because that's not my area of expertise. Yes?
It's been a while since I've been on the science board, but I thought that after the January submission, they're put online so that section policy people can take a look at it and provide input before the JPC meeting in April. Is that still happening?
That's correct. Okay. That is still happening. So everybody can see what is submitted. So each policy is designed based on area of expertise of the members on the science board to two members. The task of those two members is to read every single reference against the proposal in the policy based on their area of expertise. And so if the reference is a Wikipedia one, if a reference is a URL, if a reference is not from the American Journal of Public Health, if it's not a credible peer-reviewed reference, It takes away the significance and the credibility of the policy. So take time to do it, because we absolutely go back and read all the references. We actually go back and find the pages where you're cited. It is a tremendously rigorous process. Those two reviewers then get time on the calendar during that day. The primary reviewer presents, the secondary reviewer presents, and often a third reviewer sometimes presents. That presentation, that summary, is then discussed with the entire science board. There is another level of discussion. After that level of discussion, there is a vote, whether it's approved with conditions, or not approved. All those, of course, are recommendations going into the Joint Policy Committee. We are very particular, as scientists usually are, for a point-by-point review, a point-by-point feedback to the author back for suggestions in improving it. Those minutes are provided to the author, point-by-point, on page 67, line 17. That's how rigorous it is. So we go through all that. Then that feedback goes to the Joint Policy Committee. The Joint Policy Committee consists, as Lynn indicated, of the three boards. It's co-chaired by the chairs of the three boards. So you have continuing expertise coming out of the science board into the JPC, and now getting additional expertise, important expertise from the action board and the education board. And so then there is another open, totally open review building on what the science board has already done. So by the time you get a summary from a decision from the JPC, it's a very rigorous one. It went through almost 5 months, 6 months of review by several people. So we talked about feasibility of the action, practical and doable, and if an evaluation plan exists. So here is where we want to go. Because policy development is a critical one for us, policy influencing national policy is absolutely critical. We hosted Administrator Lisa Jackson on Friday because we worked for a full year on defending the changes that some might want to make to our most protective environmental legislation, and that's the Clean Air Act. So those are the kinds of things that we do. So we want to bring this expertise to you, and I'd love to hear suggestions to every single unit, whether it's a section, a SPIC, or a caucus. How we do that? Is it through a forum? Is it through a webinar? Is it through putting things online? How is it that we identify in your section, SPIC, or caucus one or two or three or four people who will, their job would be to force themselves into policy development so that they are your buddy within the section as you're developing a new policy. So when the policy then comes up, it has gone through all this, is informed through all of this. So reach out to other units, you've heard that, conduct the scan, make a go, no-go decision. If you found out that you had 44 other obesity policies, no matter how passionate you are about your issue, you might decide that this is a no-go to, you know, because of all the recommendations that you see. Draft the new policy if it's a go. Review the policy against those quick questions that I just shared with you, and then revise and submit. It's okay to go through 35 drafts. It feels like the federal government. I spent a dozen of years in there. It's okay to do that because it only becomes better. So when you are thinking of a new policy, is the evidence-based robust? Now, I had a question earlier, and I wanted to bring that up. What if the evidence base is not complete? In environmental health, we deal with that all the time. It's okay. Then you recommend actions based on the existing evidence base, and what we always do is then say there is additional, we urge ABC agency to do additional research on 1, 2, 3, 4 gap. That's perfectly fine to do. Is it feasible and is it sustainable? So here is the session this afternoon, and I really highly recommend it because we will go through the pain that and show you the pain that we're going to establish evidence when we establish community-based develop community-based intervention. So it's in the Renaissance. Please come, and then you'll get an insight of how that really works. So thank you. Question. So, for example, if your action is amend, urge Congress to amend Section 214 of H.R. 791, that's not, because that might never happen. So then your recommendation will not work.
Other right.
I also wanted to say a little something about late breakers. late breakers are important. They're particularly important if a new action, a new piece of science, a new activity happened after the January submission. And so it's between January and, let's say, something happened on October 10th. And we've had late breakers, we reviewed late breakers Saturday evenings. And some of them indeed follow those criteria. Got another question? Get Lynn. Other questions? General questions to all three of us. Yes.
Sometimes policies are passed maybe by consent, the calendar, or the governing council. So they're successful and universally supported, but they aren't in that year's priority list on the action board. So they legislative lobbyists for APHA don't take any action on those. What would you recommend for a policy that's sort of an orphan like that? They're just not in the priority. And there may be more pressing priorities, you know, and granted, not every policy can be the first priority. So, you know, we have to prioritize our lobbyists and so on. But what steps can we take? You were mentioning disseminating, you know, letting our congressional staff know, but if it's not a priority of the action board, they're not going to take any action.
Well, actually, you could do some pre-homework, so to speak, and one is during the environmental scan piece. It's like, what is currently hot and what is new? Again, the example of the Clean Air Act, it's in court for multiple reasons. It's in court for the priority pollutants, right? Administrator Jackson wanted to declare those hazardous substances. It's in court for that, but that already happened. The most recent issue with mercury and in boilers and regulation of mercury, it will be promulgated December 16. It will go to court. We expect that. So this whole year, APHA has been actively involved in defending the Clean Air Act. That is absolutely current. Now, if there was another policy about, and I'll just continue to use my ridiculous example, about green chairs at Tulane, it may be an excellent policy, but what's hot on the, and what has the greatest public health impact, that's what it has the greatest public health impact, might this year be the Clean Air Act.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, if, for example, you're the author
of the Green Chair one, right.
The Green Chair one, we understand it's not a priority, it's, you know, there are more pressing public health issues. What can the section, if it's green chair color,
right.
What can they do to, besides sending a letter to, did you know about our new APHA policy on green chairs? Okay, well, other than sending a letter, what are the steps that we can take?
The broader your coalition is going in developing that green chair policy, the better you're ready to, one, disseminate, and to, two, hook it on, do exactly what Congress does with what's called a rider. You know what a rider is like, it's that bridge to nowhere that's tacked on the defense bill, or, you know, something that has nothing to do with the housing bill or so, and if you want to have your issue addressed, tag it on. So That's knowing your friends in the organization. So if you're passionate about green chairs and there is a section that looks at ergonomics, I'm just making this up, tack it on to that, because then it becomes part of what's current.
So, but is it a section within APHA, or let's say the green chair policy is adapted
right.
By APHA,
right.
Another green chair policy of APHA, or would you seek out congressmen or in a certain subcommittee that have an ergonomics bill?
You can, absolutely you can.
Independently say, hey, by the way, we want this rider attached.
Right. I was going to mention that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. You start where it hurts. That's what I usually tell people. You start at the district level. That's the people who, at the district level, in their district. That's where they get their home district. That's where congressional district. That's where they right. That's where they get elected. Elaine. Absolutely. Yes. So the other thing that you should know, you know, our organization gets lobbied all the time to support issues, and we select which issues we support. So, Trevor, we've been very active in healthcare reform, active in the Clean Air Act, but we may be active in some areas that may not be on the front lines every day, but we are active, and so having something on the books is really critical. Other questions? Yes.
Well, I just make a comment. I was at the hearing yesterday and talking to Dan Copper, and Elaine and I are previous members of the JPC, and they were talking about forming, and I thought this was going to be talked about, a buddy group that they would take alumni from the JPC, and
right.
We would be available for people if you wanted to have a coach or somebody else
right.
Do stuff before it. And so I'm sure Elaine and I would be happy to do that.
So that's what we're asking. Right, that's the buddy system we are talking about. We'd like you to work with the Elaines of the world, and we are willing. So it's a two-level system what we'd like to put in place, but we need your suggestions of how to do that. One is to reach out to those that are first in developing policies. Your previous JPC members, previous Action Board or Education Board or Science Board members, because they have gone through this process on the other side of the table. The second thing is that work with those that are interested in developing policy to create this network, so that even if you don't have a savvy policy developer in your section or your caucus, you know who they are, you know who the savvy, experienced people are. And so personally, from the Science Board, I'm no longer this year, I gave out the chair gavel to Elizabeth Bancroft, but I'm personally committing to the organization to make this happen, to create this buddy system, working with our colleagues who have done it and people who are working at FAR. So I'd like to learn how best to make this learning network happen. I guess that's what I'm going to call it. Thank you so much. There was a question in the back, yes. Yes. It is session, it's at 2:30 this afternoon in the Renaissance, and it's session 3322, Making Science Work for Communities. It's Congressional Hall C in the Renaissance Hotel across the street. Other questions? So I'd love a list of names of people who'd like to volunteer, and I'd love to know whether we can do this to webinars, to during affiliate meetings and state affiliate meetings. However we can do that, I'm committed to make this work. Back to Tricia.